This session is from the 2021 Shepherd's 360 International Church Leaders Conference. For more information, visit shepherds360.org.
So, well, we can do this. So, Gail,
Dwayne,
and Dan. Tamara and Rob.
Yeah.
You can tell. She lied about her last name, though. So,
that's true. That's why
very
I was smoking.
Newlywed. In fact, today is her 1 month anniversary, isn't it?
That is true.
Yeah. 1 month today.
So and you decided to spend it with us.
Huh? That's right. Yeah.
It's like, is there something we need to know about Peter? And
he's okay.
So I'm a partner with Cape and Crouse. I lead our church and denomination services. As I mentioned, I'm in the Los Angeles area, and so actually work with clients out of our four California offices and also out of Texas, and got clients in Nevada as well.
So. Yeah. I also am a partner at CAPEN. I'm out of the Colorado Springs office, been there about 11 years, and have served on my own church, both as a finance director and on the board as a treasurer. So have experience on that side as well as then on the audit side. And Rob as well worked at a church as an executive pastor for a while. So
and a CFO at a different church. So, yeah, I've got almost 10 years of being on your side of the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
So which helps us understand. So
yeah.
Just out of curiosity, if you could just let us know kind of the type of organization you're with in your role, that can help us to tailor some of the comments that we make.
Yeah.
So Gail, you're with a rescue mission, and yes. your role there is?
My husband and I started the mission, and I'm like the CFO.
Okay. Wayne?
So I'm at Metro Baptist Church. We have a Christian school and a preschool. My title is the business manager. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah.
But kind of anything that doesn't fall under one of the pastors.
Yeah.
I'm the director of a small church planting and church consulting agency.
My name is Wayne Bullock. I'm an elder at Mount Zion Church right here in Cary.
Oh, okay.
And I've got responsibility for it, all administration.
Oh, cool.
And
sure. Alan Jones. I work here at Shepherd Seminary. I'm on the seminary side, not the church side. And for the seminary, I'm the director of distance learning, and I run the kind of logistics and everything. And so... And I remember, I grew up right here, and I remember when Gail and her husband were hearing the story of the little country folk moving in to start the Durham Rescue Mission. That's a fantastic story, what God's done with that. It's an amazing work of God to be dealing with. But mainly I'm on the distance learning side for the seminary. Okay. And our experience, and of course, with the CARES Act, and you're talking about the funding, which is why I got all the we got all the toys. COVID really, you know, because they're always telling me we'll do it when we have leftover money.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
You know, if you're a church in a seminary, you know, at end of budget year, fiscal year, there's usually not a lot left over.
Right.
But COVID kind of forced our hand. So instead of apologizing, you know, for what we have, we're kind of up to speed now.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I'm irritated because my IT guy's making me look bad by my Wi-Fi dropping for me. You know? Can't do that. I can't look bad, you know.
But, see, we come, Cape and Crouse comes prepared.
There you go.
Glad to have you. We're like Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Glad to have you here.
So, and I'm going to step out of the way and let Tamara take the first part of this.
Sure.
You can walk through it and I'll just get out of your way.
Yeah, well, we kind of have two things that we want to talk about today. One is related to what's the overall climate for nonprofit tax. And then secondly, Rob will chat about how COVID has changed the way that we budget at any organization. So we'll touch on that as well. There we go. We have our disclaimer up here somewhere.
There's a lag.
Okay. A little bit about Cape and Crouse as we get started. We are a national CPA firm, a full-service CPA firm. We have offices all across the states. We were started about 50 years ago, and we exist to serve ministries. So probably 99% of our client base is faith-based, not-for-profit organizations. So that includes churches and rescue missions, higher education,
mission church planning organizations.
Church planning organizations, exactly. So we serve those ministries by providing audit and other attest work, advisory work, tax consulting, as well as tax work to all of those organizations. So it's a real joy for us to be able to serve ministries that we really care about. It's the reason all of us are at Cape and Krause, is because of the clients that we get to serve. So a little bit more about the firm. You can see our client base there. We've got over 1,500 entities that we do serve in multiple geographical locations. So like I mentioned at the top, we're going to talk about two things: the current tax climate, as well as budget adjustments that have come to light because of what we've encountered over the past year and a half or so. So the first, maintaining your overall tax exempt status and what has changed related to that. There's really been no news, which the old adage of no news is good news, it's a good thing. So really no big news related to the tax exempt status. Churches themselves remain exempt from income tax. There's no serious threat coming down the pipeline related to that exemption status. All not-for-profit organizations, however, do have the caveat of if you have an unrelated business income, which is a trade or business that's regularly carried on, then you do potentially owe tax on that unrelated business income. So even though you're exempt from the overall tax, you may still have tax on this unrelated business that you would have. Not a bad thing.
And if I can jump in, I was on a call with a client earlier this week, or last week, and they were saying, yeah, but whatever we earn, we put right back into the ministry. It's for the church, and so we don't have to pay tax on that. I said, yeah, you do. Yeah. So it doesn't matter what you use it for. It's the source of the income that matters.
Exactly. Churches themselves are exempt from filing a 990. Other organizations, such as a rescue mission, you guys, unless for some reason you qualify under that church umbrella.
We are actually exempt because we filed as a church.
You did file as a church. Yeah. So you, there are caveats to that.
But we do file the 990.
You do still.
We have chosen.
Here you go.
To voluntary filing.
Yeah. Which is an allowable thing. I have a number of clients that are, they qualify under that church exemption, but they still choose to file the 990. Even though churches are exempt, there's a small number of people or voices that are always trying to get more transparency for churches, or rather limited exemptions for churches. It's still just a murmur. Nothing's really been discussed so far as moving on that, but it always bears some monitoring. There are still significant exemptions related to your overall hiring practices. So being a church, you are allowed to give employment preference under that religious, under the concept of religion, but only for those institutions whose purpose and character is primarily religious, which if your articles of incorporation has something related to a religious purpose, if your day-to-day activities, et cetera, you would fall underneath that. The exemption, of course, does not extend to other discrimination related to race, color, sex, age, disability, et cetera.
There is a case that is working its way through the court system. Seattle's Union Gospel Mission, you're familiar with them, happened to be my client. And a case where there was a volunteer attorney who then applied, was not hired because of lifestyle issues, let's say. And so he sued the mission. The mission actually won in the lower court in Washington, state of Washington, went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court basically overturned it, remanded that back to the lower court, and they've now appealed that to the Supreme Court. So we'll see if it's one that's taken up. I suspect it will be.
So the Ninth Court helped overthrew it?
No, Washington. It was in the state of Washington.
Washington so, upheld, then the Ninth Circuit?
No, Washington Supreme Court.
Oh, the Washington Supreme Court. Now it's going to go to the U.S. Okay, yeah, got it.
And so now it's going to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Got it.
And they're actually being defended by ADF.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yeah.
Another one of our clients.
That's right. Yes. The ministerial exemption, if any of you have heard of that, that's essentially if an individual qualifies as a minister, the organization in which they work for has some exemptions. That individual is not allowed to essentially file a case, or rather most likely wouldn't win if they file a case on any one of these discrimination issues. It is still alive and well. There have been a few cases as of recent in which the individuals that filed these actually were part of a school that's attached to a church. One individual had minister in her title, the other did not. In both cases, it was upheld. That ministerial exemption was upheld. That second ruling did just shift that emphasis of what's the actual underlying job responsibility in responsibilities, as opposed to what is the title of the individual, because that second one did not have the ministerial exempt or the minister in their name. The last thing on tax exempt items, the minister's housing allowance, no issue. There's always murmurings of what's going to happen with this, but as of now, there's no issue with it. So, all that said, the overall climate is still fairly consistent. However, we all know that in the last number of years, there have been significant shifts in the way religious organizations may be perceived by the general public. And that is a very broad statement. But because of that, there are things that I think we should be prepared for or take into consideration currently to potentially address any risks that come down the road. The first one is a church or an organization being very clear about its beliefs and practices when admitting any new members. Organizations that are older do tend to be a little bit higher at risk because those policies, those procedures may be from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or even farther than that.
May I take a picture of that screen?
Yeah.
Well, and if you want these slides, just give us your card. We'll send you the slides.
Yeah. But it would be good to review some of those policies, some of those practices, procedures. And actually, I think it's the next slide has a listing of a lot of these policies and procedures that would be good to take another look at, including employee and volunteer manuals. I had a client in California, actually, that had a volunteer that was helping at an event that signed some type of waiver, but it was a very loose waiver. They were working the event. They fell off the stage. And this happened probably 5 years ago. They fell off the stage. That individual just brought to the clients. They just filed suit, essentially, against the client within the past year, even though it happened multiple years ago. It's just a mess. They're still in the middle of it. But looking at those, buttoning up those policies, always a good thing. In the case of, we hope it never happens, and hopefully the people that are volunteering for you extend some grace and understanding when those things do, but it's good to look at them anyway.
We had David Gibbs come in and redo our constitution here.
Did you?
Yeah. Tighten them up.
Which is good. There's so much that is shifting.
It's a different world.
In the current culture that it is important to be on the front edge, which, go ahead and take a picture of this slide if you want to. And again, we can send you the slides, but here's some policies and procedures that should be reviewed, or we would say should be reviewed, just to ensure that there's no gaping holes in them based upon that current climate in which we find ourselves. So personnel matters, absolutely. Benevolence, want to make sure that we're being consistent in any benevolence funds. Conflict of interest, that's a big one right now, ensuring that you have an actual conflict of interest policy and it's being reviewed consistently so that someone on your board doesn't get, you just don't know what could happen. There's a number of instances out there now in which reviewing any conflicts probably could have mitigated some of the concerns or brought it to attention. Social media, whistleblower protection, intellectual property, who owns? Does the church own the sermons? Does the individual own the sermons? Who takes ownership of those after this, and can someone else use them? All of that. And then within your personnel manual, updating all of these different guidelines, such as expense reimbursements, what is reimbursable, what's not, are we being consistent in our practices when it comes to your overall benefits and your compensation and performance reviews, separation and exit steps, all of those, making sure that you have policies in place that address those current risks in the climate in which we find ourselves. So a couple other best practices to acknowledge is having written job descriptions for each position. Are expectations clear as to what this individual should be doing in that particular position? Maintaining different types of church insurance to try to mitigate risks should something be brought to light that could cost the church or another organization, whatever type of organization you are, could help take some of those precautions there. Executive compensation studies, are you paying your executives an appropriate amount of pay based upon what others are doing in that geographical area? Providing periodic refreshers and trainings on your overall policies, performing those annual performance reviews, and then cybersecurity training is not something that we thought of even 10 years ago, let alone 5 years ago. For that point, a lot of us, it's changed so much in 5 years, you know. And so are we taking the necessary precautions related to any cybersecurity issues that may be out there? And do our employees know where the risks lie? Can they identify phishing types of emails? Any comments, questions on those things we just blazed through pretty quickly before we shift gears? We'll let Rob take over then.
So budgeting, it's that time of year, right? At least for some organizations. So probably a good thing to talk about. Hopefully when we're done, you'll be able to identify whether your budgets are tied to your strategy. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then identify some changes that have been made in budget priorities. It's one of the things that the church actually asked us to talk about, what changes we're seeing in church budgets. So we'll do that. So the challenge that we face, obviously, is that the pandemic and the economic circumstances have created changes in how we do church, right? I mean, who would have thought that you could go X number of months with church being totally online and that you would actually grow and prosper and do well in that? So a lot of changes there in how church is being done. And that's caused us to think about our priorities and our tactics and the strategies. And going forward, I think we all would agree that church is never going to go back to the way it was. Some people want it to, but church is not going to be the way it was 18 months ago. It's never going back to that. And so what does that mean from a strategic standpoint? What does that mean from a budgeting standpoint? And so some of the questions that we need to be asking ourselves is, what activities have stopped or will stop? Organizations have revisited those and said, what are we going to do differently as a result of how things have changed? Because one of the things that we know is that, you know, things were changing. And when things are changing and then there's a crisis like the pandemic, that accelerates those changes. It doesn't mean that, okay, once the pandemic's over, we're going to go back to the way it was. Like I said, that's not going to happen. These changes that we're seeing were already in process. This has just accelerated it. So now we have to react to that. And so how does that change your strategic plan? How does it change the annual operating plan? How does it change your ministry goals and what you're trying to achieve in the next 6 months or a year? And if you think about it, you've got to have those clearly laid out, and your budget has to be directly tied to that. And that's where I see a big disconnect in a lot of organizations, not just churches, but especially in churches where the budget is not tied to that strategic plan. Oftentimes, pre-pandemic, it was, well, let's take last year plus 3%. Major disaster. I mean, that's just so mindless, in my opinion. Hope I'm not offending anybody, but that really doesn't work. It's not tied to your strategic plan. It doesn't take a critical look at those ministries that aren't performing well or we shouldn't even be doing anymore. And it doesn't put the money where the ministry is really being successful in trying to achieve your goals. So I am not a fan of that approach. All right, so what changes are we seeing in churches, specifically looking at some of the changes we're seeing? Well, there's obviously the recognition that online's here to stay. Online's not going away. That virtual church service, you know, streaming your service, doing things virtually, that is here to stay. And if anything, it's going to become even more important as we go forward, because there are people, you know, there are people that have tuned into your church's services that have never darkened the door of a church and may not ever darken the door of a church. So what does that mean? So the thing that I'm seeing churches start to work on, and I work with churches, by the way, I actually work with some smaller churches, probably 100 or 200 people that, I just provide some advice to probably the second largest church in the country. It's got 40,000 people on it. And I've got churches all in between that size. So this information here that I'm going to present is really what I've talked to those clients about and what they're doing. So it's pretty much consistent across the board. Looks a little bit different in the big church than the smaller church, but it's fairly consistent. So the first one is focus on online connection and community. That's a real key is how do we get, so we've got people watching the service, how do we actually get them connected with the church so that they don't just dial in on Sunday morning and watch the service and then go away and they come back next Sunday? How do we get them connected? And the key is that people are moving away from really focusing on content consumption. So don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Content's important, but it's not the key thing anymore. There's a lot of good content out there. If I want content, I can go get it. But churches really are focusing on that connection. Personnel costs, looking at the online. So churches are hiring, as their budgets allow, online pastors, technical directors, media directors, graphic designers, everything around that online experience is what they're looking at. Churches are tending to promote micro gatherings and micro campuses. So rather than thinking about trying to bring everybody into the building, recognizing that maybe half of our people are not going to come to the building on Sunday. I used to be the executive pastor at the church that I attend. And since they opened up again in March, my wife and I have been twice. We go to church every Sunday. We're involved in a small group. We've got other ministry activities. But we've been twice. Just it's more convenient. Concerns about the pandemic and the virus and all that. And so I don't think we're unusual. Now, there are a lot of people that are making that decision. We won't be that way forever. We want to go in person. There's something about being there in person. But I think that's fairly typical. So these micro gatherings and micro campuses, think really kind of an expanded small group strategy or small groups on steroids. Along with that, recognizing that people aren't coming back to the buildings, organizations, churches are thinking about their strategies regarding the building. Again, it's going to be more about connecting than gathering. So that big auditorium, how much are you going to fill that up? Or maybe it was, 80% full, you're full, right? It's 80% full and you can't get any more in there. Is it 80% full these days? For most churches, the answer is no. For most churches, it's probably half of that. And so they're thinking about what else can we do with that building? We've got this thing that we got millions of dollars invested in. What do we do with that? And so they're thinking about how can we use that to connect people? How can we use that to equip leaders? How can we use the building to actually reach people online in terms of what we're doing? From a budget perspective, what are the costs of the sanitizing and all that? Fairly significant costs. And then how can we repurpose that building? How can we use it in a new and different way to achieve the goal related to getting people connected online? Or connected in total, not necessarily all online, but certainly partially. And then children's ministry, their budget changes were there. Seeing there is that they're, again, addressing both in-person and online for kids' ministries. So, personnel budget. So, again, less emphasis on in-person and on-site workers. More hiring for the virtual engagement. More emphasis on volunteers. I've seen a lot of churches that are really promoting volunteers because they're not going to have the dollars. If you're hiring people to serve and to promote the online, you have fewer dollars for the people that are going to be on campuses. So a lot of that work is being shifted to volunteers. Communication is increasingly important. So we're seeing money being spent for communication processes, for communication directors, for that sort of thing. And again, I'm looking at technology for communication. So that's important. And the staffing, I think more than ever, we're seeing staffing linked to a strategic making sure that it really makes sense. A couple of things to think about, I think, when you're thinking about your budgeting is I've become a big fan of rolling budgets. I've heard clients use these words and say, well, our budget, once it's set, we can't change it. The budget's set. board approved it. Okay, great. And what happens if God presents you with a new opportunity? What happens if circumstances change, like, oh, I don't know, say a pandemic? You know, what do you do there? Your budget's not set. So the budget's a tool. And one of the things I recommend is thinking about using a rolling budget. And I'm a big believer in forecasting out 12 months for a church, because even with online giving, we know that church is still a seasonal business. There's still summer. Not like it used to be, but it's still going to be there. And so I really am a big believer in looking at that 12-month cash forecast, because if you can identify out here that there's going to be a problem, you can start managing towards that. I had a client that I was serving as their outsourced CFO, and I remember sitting in January, or actually in December when we were doing the budget and the forecast, said November is going to be a bad cash month. For them, it was actually November. And every decision that was made during that year always was in the context of, we got to make sure we can make it through November. And they found that very helpful. So rolling budgets is where you take and you re-budget the next 3 months. So you're budgeted out for 9 months or for 12 months, end of the quarter. Now you've got 9 months. So re-look at the current quarter, add the fourth quarter onto the back end, and just make sure your assumptions in between are still fine. And so that way you're always looking at 12 months and it's always fresh. So it's a lot of work. But I think, especially if you're in a situation where cash is tight, it's very, very helpful. Think about building or rebuilding cash reserves. Target somewhere between, you know, we say 6 months, 3 to 6 months. If you're 3 months, I think you're probably okay. If you can do a little bit more, that's great. You know, and I hear people say, well, people don't give us money just to invest it in the bank and let it sit there. Yeah, but that's why stewardship. You have a savings fund at home, right? That's there for an emergency.
So yeah, if I can say one thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, there. That, I mean, all of these things apply to not just churches as well, since many of you guys aren't churches, but this target of 3 to 6 months of expenses, this is something we've been saying to our clients, churches plus, for the past number of years, and was highlighted clearly when March and April of 2020 hit. I had a couple organizations that were highly dependent upon summer program revenue. I had summer camps that I work with, and then also some mission training type of entities that they bring missionaries into their organization prior to sending them out to the field. Well, missionaries aren't going to the field when we're in the middle of a pandemic, so nobody was coming to their organization. I had one summer camp that had like 2 months, consistently 2 months of cash expenses on hand. When the spring of last year hit, they struggled so much, and the board ended up having to donate a lot of money in order to cover, just to keep their people employed when they had no money coming in over the course of the summer. One of the mission training organizations that I work with, they've been sitting on like a year and they of cash on hand, and they'd previously had conversations of, is this too much? What do we do with this excess cash? Last year, they were very thankful, and it took one of the variables away, or one of the concerns away, when the pandemic hit, of them being able to say, we know we're going to be able to make payroll, and we're going to be able to make payroll for a while. How do we best help the missionaries that we're trying to serve? So they were able to put an emphasis then rather on their program, even though their circumstances changed and they weren't able to carry out program in the same way, because they didn't have to worry about this. And so it's been, like I said, been highlighted now that we're in the middle of a pandemic, but it's so important. It's so important. And to Rob's point of, on the personal side, you want to have an emergency fund or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. It's the same thing for an organization. And it really is a good thing to monitor and keep track of.
Thanks, Tim. So debt reduction strategies, sort of along the same lines, what can we do to reduce debt? And then the operational improvements. I love that I have somebody from a rescue mission. I've got a rescue mission client that has a number of thrift stores in Los Angeles County. LA County was probably leading the country in raising the minimum wage, so they pretty quickly got it up to the $15 level. This mission, obviously, they use a lot of basically minimum wage workers to help process the things that they receive and to work in the store. They were at the point that they were really getting squeezed financially. So they looked at what automate some of our other processes. So one of the areas they looked at was the call center that they have, where they call out to arrange for donations. Their trucks drive around and pick up stuff that people donate. And they were able to automate that to the point that they not only reduced the headcount, but they're actually able to start serving other rescue missions and using their call center for them as well. So they're able to generate some revenue from that. And so just a simple operational improvement helped them to maintain order. Otherwise, they would have been in a real bind because they would not have been able to afford to continue something. I mean, the thrift stores can't go away. It's half of their income. So operational improvements, I think, are a great area to look at. So I mentioned a couple of things. We've got some budgeting tools. So this book, ebook that I wrote back at the beginning of the pandemic, that's certainly available for you. You've got the website there. There's also a budget analysis template. I remember one of the questions I had when I was an executive pastor, 2008, 2009, during that time, giving dropped off the table. We had to cut costs, and you tell the elders, hey, pretty quickly, you know, we can cut a few dollars, but before we go too far down that path, we're going to have to be cutting salaries for people. They didn't understand why. So I created a template to help them understand our fixed, semi-fixed, and variable costs, and why a church just doesn't have a lot of variable costs. There's a lot of fixed and semi-fixed. So that's there. And then there's a cash flow template if you need that to help. We also wrote a book. One of our partners, Ken Tan, wrote an ebook called The Four S's That Keep Church Leaders Awake at Night. And again, you can find that at capenkraus.com/awake. There's checklists, there's best practices, there's great stuff there. If you don't get this, if you want the slide deck, let me know. We'll send it to you. I can send you a link to be able to download all this other information as well. So with that, 1 minute before we're supposed to be done. Questions?
So do you not see any changes on the horizon as far as a hostile tax environment for churches and nonprofits?
I think there's some people that are certainly stirring the pot. You know, the folks from the separation of church.
Oh, sure. They're always there.
Those kinds of folks are always going to be
there. They're always there.
So I don't see anything that's necessarily...
Not gaining traction or anything.
Not yet. It wouldn't surprise me, given the leanings of the current administration, it wouldn't surprise me to see some of these things start to take hold. And that's why I think we need to be prepared for it. We need to do some of the things that Tamara talked about, especially making sure that your policies are up to date, and that you've looked at your bylaws in particular, whatever they're called in your state, looking at those bylaws to make sure that they support the positions you're going to take on some of these more cultural hot topics. Yeah. So I think there's always people that are going to be working at that, but we don't see anything that's imminent. Other questions? Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was good.
Thanks for listening to this session from the 2021 Shepherds 360 International Church Leaders Conference. This material is copyrighted and may not be altered or sold. For information, visit shepherds360.org.